This is the Litigation Management Podcast, and I'm your host, Wesley Todd, the CEO of CaseGlide. And the Litigation Management Pod is where we talk to some of the most influential and successful people in and around the industry surrounding insurance. And I'm going for home runs here, not singles. So we're talking to folks that have influence on the areas that all the litigation management professionals touch, such as C-level executives at insurance companies, people running huge litigation data companies, servicing all lawyers and all types of clients, and other people, you know, looking at the next 5 to 10 years in industries where insurance and litigation is implicated. I have some unbelievable guests lined up. Today on the Litigation Management Pod, I have the pod father himself, Nick Lamparelli, and Nick has a very long resume, but I'll go through just some of the highlights. Nick is the founder and chief underwriting officer at Rethought Insurance, and Rethought is an insurtech that specializes in commercial flood. Nick is also, he's had several podcasts past, but he's also, his current podcast project is the Yellow Book Road, and the Yellow Book Road focuses on actionable, practical, and tech-founded advice for insurance companies. And Nick, last but not least, Nick is also the virtual mentor for the entire insurance industry. Sorry to break that to you, Nick, but you know, Nick shares his journey along the way. He has access and experience that thousands of us don't. And so we get to watch him, whether it be through Twitter or through LinkedIn or through the pod, and learn what everybody's thinking about. So with that, I want to welcome Nick. Welcome to the pod, Nick.
Thank you. That was quite an intro. And Twitter and LinkedIn are like my diary. So you get a glimpse of my frustrations on a day-to-day basis as I log in my journal.
Yes, they are more than frustrations, though. They are really kind of, you've hit like an epiphany and you have an insight. Is there any other place we can find you, or are those pretty good, right?
Those are the two places. I do blog out of Review, which is now the blogging platform of Twitter. So those are linked. So yeah, I know when we get to the end, I can share my info, but Twitter and LinkedIn are like the two areas, because where else are you going to find litigation professionals and insurance professionals?
That's true.
Instagram?
Yeah. I think we're holding off on that for now. You could do some beach pictures now that you're down in Naples. So I brought Nick in. You know, the audience of this podcast is claims litigation professionals, other litigation professionals. I brought Nick in because for this industry, I am looking to, or for litigation managers, I'm not looking for a player in the game. I'm not looking for somebody has tactics on the next, legal argument. I'm looking for people that are more like the commissioner of the game, the people that are making the rules, the people that actually know where it's headed and different things that are happening. And that's no slight on our litigation management professionals, but I'm trying to provide as much value as possible. And, I leave the legalese to the lawyers. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Nick is really that type of guy. That's why we picked Nick for the first podcast. So Nick, I want to start off with a easy question. What's exciting you right now? What are you working on right now that has you very excited?
So there's a couple things that I think are really exciting. We've just in the last few years, there's just computer and digital technologies have just exploded, right? And what's available. So, you know, I probably everyone that's listening to this has heard of AI and machine learning, but even below that, at a like base level, right? There's just so much data available. And I don't think we have to wait for AI or machine learning to actually kind of like get up to speed. There's a ton that we can do now. And that's like the big thing that's exciting me now is just the availability of all sorts of interesting data via social media. And of course I'm talking as a property professional, right? So social media, satellites, satellite imagery, digital imagery, just big data that's available. You know, just this past week, I started working with some river gauge data, and I was like, my God, where have you been all my life, right? Like, I knew it existed before, but the types of things that you can build and the types of predictions that you can make and the how those predictions translate to potential products, solutions for society, I think is the big turn. You know, everyone's always been talking about how insurance is like this, you know, a big data industry, but the industry itself has really struggled with the data. They got a ton of it, but it's all over the place and they don't know what to do with it. I think we're going to see this pivot point where we start to figure out what to do with it. We start to make sense of it. Even for companies that have a lot of legacy data, we start to piece things together and we can use that data and really make drastic changes to what an insurance product is. And in a kind of a metaphysical sense, that's the exciting part. Like, insurance is changing, and what it will be in the future, I think, is going to be very different than what it is now and how we buy and sell it and how we think about it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to unwrap there. You look at just news that comes out on like a weekly basis now. And then if you do your own homework, there's really not a lot of news about these things that are going on, first of all, but then there's enough news to tell you things are changing really fast. To your point, these are multi-billion dollar problems, these data problems. Yeah. And there actually are still problems because you, on the front lines, as I can too, and as so many of us in the industry can, you can actually see how they can be fixed, and it drives you crazy. So, but it's also exciting, right? It's also
Completely. Like, you know, I'm working with some companies that are doing things in, or advising some companies that are working in the area of like smart devices. And I was working with a publicity professional where he was asking me just layperson questions about, you know, what does this mean? And at a high level, like, we struggle with that. Like, we're as insurance professionals, we're immediately stuck with, like, you know, what does this mean for loss costs? How do loss costs translate to rates? Then what are premiums? How do we package this all up? What's a judge going to say? What's a court going to say? What's a regulator going to say? We're so stuck in the trees. If you can get up to the forest view, it's bigger, right? Like, we had discussions about, you know, hey, these devices can prevent, like, all those claims in Texas that just happened. These devices can turn off the water, right? So the pipe breaks, but you don't have $100,000 claims. You just have a cleanup, right? That's a big deal for society. Like, that's a big transitional shift in risk management, right? So in the risk management triangle, you're thinking of loss prevention, right? Prevent the loss from happening. But if the loss does happen, mitigate the effects of that. And if you can't mitigate, then transfer it. But as a society and culture, we've leaned on that third leg, right? That third side of the triangle or third leg of the stool, whatever analogy you want to use, we've leaned on that. And that's caused all kinds of issues over generations. And we're at a point now where it's like, no, that can be changed. We have enough experience seeing how other industries have taken data and made data, turned it from a commodity into the value proposition. Insurance can do that. So not just take data and like turn it into a rate, but take data and be able to inform the consumer, like, this is what this rate means. This is where this rate came from. This is how you affect the rate and how you can change it going forward, like installing a device or, you know, something like that. It's massively exciting in that insurance won't be insurance. It'll be, you know, you can use whatever analogy you want. We'll be a data industry that happens to sell insurance, whatever, something like that. But that's where it's turning.
Or you know, one of the new phrases is embedded insurance. It's just embedded. An add-on to something. It's like you buy your house.
It should be embedded. You know, Avi and Sheffy from Coverager constantly say insurance has no right. Insurance companies have no right to be a consumer-facing brand. And they say that with all sincerity because nobody really wants to buy the product. So you have no right to be a consumer-facing brand. It's that challenging, right? So it should be embedded. And but that doesn't mean that you can't have consumer-facing elements to it. And I interviewed the co-CEOs for Loop Insurance, a new insurance company, auto insurance company in Texas.
Familiar with them.
And man, they blew my mind, right? So here's a data professional on one side, you know, Carrie Ann Nadeau, data professional from MIT. Here's John Henry, guy, you know, self-proclaimed guy, you know, son of immigrants, guy from the street, marketing professional who turned himself into an entrepreneur and a venture guy. And together, like what they're doing, how they're thinking of insurance, it's like, I told them that your product is not insurance, not in the traditional way that people think of it, right? It is something else because you get like the creativity of a data professional and a marketing professional, and they're turning it into something else. It just happens to have an insurance element to it. That's interesting. Really interesting. Like to finally have a consumer facing opportunity with insurance is really interesting. You know, something outside of just selling a warranty on a, you know, tech product. That's not exciting. This is exciting. This is potentially changes the way auto insurance, homeowners insurance, and potentially commercial is thought of and bought and sold, but it becomes data and marketing that kind of drive the whole narrative.
Yeah, distribution as well. And yeah, I'm definitely, you know, that's a big idea that really leads into this other question I wanted to ask you. That's very relevant. So, all right, let's take all that together, it's embedded. It doesn't make sense to be sold. Like you said, nobody wants to buy it. You don't get anything. You get it other than peace of mind. And your largest expense, you know, is usually just added on to your mortgage or something like that. And your auto you have to have as well by state law. So it just, there's not really a corollary for it outside of it, other than they have all the rules and the laws stacked in their favor. By the way, very relevant to litigation management professionals, because as you've seen, like basically every quarter for the last year, these things are breaking down really fast. These old business models, the old guard, the old regulations, you know, they're just going away, and it's been happening for years, but it's happening so much faster now. What does, you know, we want to talk about technology, of course. Mm-hmm. I think that's a separate, I think you almost get, or for technology, you want to get yourself kind of in the mind of, okay, let's play in this world that we're still in, but step out of that. You know, that's the 5 years from now, if things stay the same. What if all the things you're seeing, all the things that are happening, all these common sense questions that people are asking about why insurance is sold the way it's sold and why it costs what it costs. What are the new insurance companies look like in 5 years, 10 years?
I think they look a lot like Loop Insurance. I think they're founded by more data oriented folks, tech oriented folks, marketing oriented folks. Loop's not the only one. There's Just Auto, right, in Arizona. So the gentleman's name escapes me, and I apologize if he happens to be listening to this, but
he's definitely listening, by the way.
He came from outside of insurance, right? I think his He was a technologist, so he sold, he did Python Anywhere as the product, sold it. And then he was famous or infamous. He's the guy that developed the algorithms that calculates the odds of a sports team winning during a game. So you see, like, you know, like third quarter.
I hate that guy.
No, but I love him too. Like, it's like, oh, okay, 75% chance. We're almost there.
Yeah. 28-3 ring a bell?
Very much. Yes. 99.6%. And we won. So there's another one right there. And then, you can tell it's a Friday afternoon. My mind's escaping me, but there's a life insurance company also, I think in New York, Day Forward, right? Aaron Shapiro, right? And I interviewed him on a podcast and I called it an ad man steps into insurance. Yeah. So another marketing guy coming in to the insurance space, and they're bringing completely different ideas. So yes, they have to work within the constraints of everything that everyone listening here is aware of. Courts, judges, state regulators, other constraints, right? So they understand that coming. Well, I can't say they understand it coming in, but they learn it quick. Yeah. That there are these constraints, and then they still build products around that. That's what you're going to see is in 5 years, you're going to see like a hell of a lot of companies like that. The incumbents are still going to be here. That's one of the unique things about insurance that technology is not going to change, is you're not going to see that disruption that you saw in other industries because the product's different. The State Farm has $125 billion of assets. No tech guy company coming in is going to make that $125 billion of liquid assets just disappear. It's stocks and bonds. Like it's a big giant pile of money. State Farm will be around for a very long time. They will decide when they want to go out of business. But I think what you're going to see is more like State Farm is going to, I always make fun of them. Sorry. They're like the biggest. So no spite on them, but State Farm's is going to struggle to get out of their own way. So I think what you'll see is that these companies will begin to lease their balance sheet, you know, start working with MGA, start developing outside programs, and just basically grant access to their balance sheet, but allow those entities to function in a digital environment that's outside of theirs. You know, so basically just report to us. Here are your guidelines, just report to us type of thing, and you can get access to our balance sheet. So I think there'll be a lot of native companies, but a ton of activity in this MGA space, because there's just no way the big legacy companies are going to be able to compete with these digital players. They're just too fast. They can get stuff online faster digitally. The advantages that these incumbents have are their size, meaning financial stability. And it also means that, they can underwrite worse because they're generating that float, right? But that's only going to get them so far. People want to interact digitally. If you can't evolve this product better than a digital company, that company could steal that business. So I think it behooves them to just partner with them, hey, we can't build it, but we have a balance sheet. We can still make money off of this, but we'll just have someone else run it for us. A lot of that's the way I think 5 years from now, potentially thousands of MGA style insurance companies.
Wow. And that's what's happened here in Florida a little bit, right? You have a lot of companies where there's like a shared balance sheet amongst reinsurers, and that entrepreneurism is good for everybody because there's a lot more competition. Obviously in Florida, there's other challenges, but you're probably seeing similar things going to happen in California on the property side and maybe even Texas now. So I think that's good news for the industry because there will be more nodes of innovation and more opportunities. So I like that perspective. I haven't heard that perspective before. Are there, going a little bit off the script here, are there any outside forces big trends just in our country or with millennials or even younger than millennials now? Are there any things there? You know, 5 years ago, I used to attend a webinar every year about self-driving cars, and there goes auto insurance and things like that. And I mean, I think you raised the right point that none of that stuff is transformational. There are a lot of things, but it's not going to disrupt in the sense that would make for a really fun podcast. But is there something else? Is there another big theme maybe to watch out for there that you could think of that makes you curious?
Well, I think what partially feeds into my prediction of what will happen 5 or 10 years from now is the big transitional stuff, which is, you know, whether you call, you know, millennials are not young anymore. So the oldest millennials are what, into their like 30s now?
You're telling me.
You know, something like that. So, but let's just call them young consumers. Listen, this is not the same type of, the generational trend is so massive. Think about how common it was in the 20th century, generation after generation, cycle after cycle. You were born, you grew up, you went to school, you graduated, you got a job, or you went to college and then got a job, then you bought a house, settled down. Like, that was a common cycle, generation after generation after generation after generation. Look what's happened just in the past couple decades. Everything has changed, right? So we're talking about, think about it.
Home ownership way down, right? Home ownership for like everything. 25 to 35, way down.
Everything, you know, school's the same, but we know that's going to change, right? So there's going to be some situation where the entire theme, or just the buying patterns, risk patterns, it's all changing dramatically. It's different. What the exposure is, how it's moving around. So if you put your insurance cap on, insurance has been predominantly for 100 years an actuarial based process, right? So loss experience has driven the rating mechanism. Actuarial methods have driven the, you know, how we reserve and stuff like that. Throw all that out, everything's changed. The product,
something great on exposure's changed. Go ahead.
People aren't buying homes.
Yeah.
Or it's changed how they buy homes or how frequently they're buying homes. Then the stuff that they're putting in their homes has changed. Their complete pattern of activity, what they do, how they do it, right? How they go on vacation. Like, everything's changed. It's flipped upside down. And the insurance industry today has not kept up with that. So you still see homeowners policies that cover pewter bowls and fur coats. Stock certificates. Who gets a stock certificate?
You're right. I forgot about that.
They don't exist anymore, but it's still on the ISO form, right? Like, that stuff has not kept up. But just, you know, from a bigger sense, just as you think about like buyer personas, right? Who is my customer? That has changed, right? What they're doing, how they're doing it, what they're buying, what they think about what they buy, whether they care about it. And so when I talked about the data element of it, there's has to be a transition towards the ability to issue an insurance policy when you have no claims experience. How do you do that?
You know, when you first started talking about this stuff 5 years ago, 4 years ago,
you thought I was crazy?
It sounded crazy. It sounded interesting. It made sense. But guess what? Every month, there's about $100 million going into this exact thing, you know, whether it be through the investments in the insurtechs, these that are doing something that's maybe not transformationally different, but yeah, very much aligned with a different view of the homeowner and the risk, the kins, the hippos.
So that's a good point, right? So
so you were right. There's hundreds of millions of dollars a month pouring into this. The problem will be solved a lot faster than we probably thought.
I think so. Yeah. And it's, so there's like from a, when you say the word transformational, I'm thinking like society has had transformational change. I don't think the insurance business model needs to change from a transformational standpoint. I think the foundation of the business model is perfectly fine, right? Like from a risk transfer mechanism and how we think about risk transfer, those, that fundamental stuff is still works and is will always work, right? Even in situations where you need to develop a product, but you don't have any claims data, how do we do that? Still, at the end of the day, it's going to generate claims, and that claims will feed back in and kind of inform us. And that's where I think like litigation can be like an extremely important element that I think not a lot of folks talk about, right? It's because, you know, ultimately all policy forms are, they may be created by an entrepreneur or someone at an insurance company, but it evolves based off of the courts, right? The courts will decide how this is all going to work out. But maybe we think about this in a different way and we think of us ourselves as like learning organizations. Like why can't insurance companies learn, right? And think and place that as the top mantle, right? Like let's learn first. Let's have all of these different aspects of our business, whether it be litigation, actuarial, general claims, underwriting, research, all of this stuff to feed in and just and educate us about our business, our industry, our particular company. That doesn't happen. Nobody does that, but maybe that's what we should have.
No, they all come in with they all have an existing value prop and positioning, and it never changes, you know, live or die. I 100% agree. That's how our business operates.
Listen, I throw this out to the mutuals and the farm bureaus all the time. I'll get into philosophical arguments about this, but name a mutual, right? Whether it's a regional or a national mutual, if that mutual disappeared, would anyone care? No, they would not. It's plenty of options that they have. No one would shed a tear except for the employees, right? Like that's the reality on the ground. Right. And so
we got to do better.
Got to get better.
Let me build off of that, you know, litigation and people don't care. What we see on the litigation side, litigation, people don't care in learning. What we see, and I know you've seen, is these monster verdicts. Mm-hmm. Oh, talk about larger trends too. People want to stick it to the man. And this is a whole new ballgame that we're playing in. The rules have changed. And if a case goes to trial on an injury, the people don't care who's at fault anymore. They are going to load the plaintiff with cash. And people talk about there's conservative areas that won't do that. There's liberal areas that will. Guess what? We all live on Zoom now. And I'm closer connected to you and to people in New York. I have more in common with you and your than people than my neighbor. I have more in common with people on Zoom than the 30 people around me on Zoom who are all over the country, all over the world, than my neighbor. There is no such thing anymore as a conservative area, a more liberal area, you know, for purposes of courts. And the problem is, to your point around learning, what happens when you get that $5 million verdict or $10 million verdict? Are you going to adjust all your reserves to $5 or $10 million and put up the close sign on the front door? I mean, so there definitely is the learning component here is crucial. And if you don't do that, these are not that good of businesses anymore. anybody insuring bodily injury, and whether it be commercial auto is the main one, but these are getting out of control, and it's reflective of how our industry feels. And I think it is one of those type of things that can transform the market. And it just underlies the whole model, and it makes you rethink the entire model. So you're kind of just, you're talking about the same thing that we're seeing on the front lines.
So, you know, I like your saying there where you're like, you're going to put up the close sign, we're not open, right? Like, is that what we're going to do? Is that how we do things? Like, oh, we just got, you know, this. I don't know. It to me, it just seems like there's so much information out there, and you're going to have bad losses. That's why we're in this field, right? Like my job is to pay claims. My bigger job is to figure out what the claims are going to be and work backwards to figure out how I'm supposed to get paid for those claims. It's no different in liability area. No different. Right? You're going to have big settlements. Your job is to work backwards and kind of figure out how this is all going to work. And I think we have enough tools to be able to execute on that. It at the end of the day, there's an alignment of interest for one thing, you know, and then there's the ability to do proper risk selection and all of that. A lot of data there, but even after that, using tools like CaseGlide, for instance, like the ability to figure out like when not to go to court, right? Like when do you not want to go face to face? And you using analytics like at every stage of the business model to really optimize that. That's what I'm talking about, right? Like that's to me the ultimate learning company where. You're not only making the best decision on the information that's presented in front of you, but those decisions should feed back into the other elements of your business, whether that be marketing, actuarial, underwriting, accounting, doesn't matter. Like there should be a feedback mechanism on all of those systems, and litigation is just one particular aspect of it. It's a very important one. I see a lot of hand wringing about the nuclear verdicts and the social inflation, but it's like, we have tools available to us to keep, you know, try to keep that stuff under control, and that we have mechanisms to kind of deal with the ramifications of that. Large verdicts, how do we handle business going forward? What do we price for it? And how do we, and more, I guess more importantly with more litigative types of businesses is how do you stay in front of it?
Yeah.
Right. How can you,
learn.
What's always been a problem with commercial auto is that the companies keep raising prices, but they raise prices like too late, like after the claims come in. And it's like, it didn't have to be that way. There's plenty of data and information and predictive models that could have helped.
Interesting.
To forecast what was coming in terms of losses or what the rates should have been ahead of time. We have all of those tools. We're not using them, honestly.
Yeah. So, I mean, this goes into what, unfortunately for the audience, is, you know, towards the end of my questions, but, you know, you think about what's the practical advice here? What's the Monday morning quarterback on these type of things? And I'll just throw out one and you know, I'd like yours too. You know, the people are, it's gotta be predictive analytics, right? Because to your point, once the data's in the system, if we do believe that things are moving and changing a little bit too fast, they're faster than they used to. And we do believe that that there might be a larger, you know, that severity might be going up. In some of these lines of business, we're not talking about all of them, but in some of these lines of business, the ones where they go up take a couple of years, a lot of times to close. And by then you've already priced another couple of years or 3 years of business. So it probably has to be, you know, it has to be predictive. What, and it has to be, you know, some of the things you talked about earlier around the individual or the, or just this extra data set, what's, or just, you know, this abundant data set. But the problem is we're already really behind. And you know, AI sounds good, machine learning sounds good, but what does somebody, you know, what does somebody do today, or what are people doing today? What can they do today to make any improvements, or even potentially just stop the bleeding?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of hit on one that I probably would have mentioned if you hadn't already brought it up. So
thanks. Well, talk to it. Yeah, explain it. But, explain it then.
But it's listen. Who are we? Why are we here? Right, like the old James Stockdale vice presidential debate. Who am I? Why am I here? Who are we though? Like, what is our purpose?
We are banks to pay lawyers. We're banks to pay lawyers, right?
So, or we're companies that get people back up on their feet somehow.
Oh, okay. All right.
So
maybe that should maybe paying lawyers shouldn't be our biggest expense.
You would try not to. I interviewed Laura Gregory, who's a defense lawyer, works for the insurance industry, mostly in the New England area.
Yeah. And
she started off, like, I was expecting a full conversation on litigation. She started off hers by saying, you know, her job is to prevent litigation.
Okay.
And I was like, I like that.
Like
we, you know, how do we do that? And she brought up, you know, things in terms of like arbitration and mediation and things that are coming around there. But it's like, first figure out what is it that we're trying to do. And I think, Wes, my biggest beef is, and this is not just insurance, this is, I think, business in general, is we, contrary to belief, we are not in business to make money. Like, if that's your primary goal, that's a really crappy goal. We're in business to solve a major problem. And if we solve it, then we deserve to get paid, right? That's how we make money. Like, it's an indirect thing, not a direct thing. Our goal should never be to make money. Our goal should be to solve problems. So decide, who are we? And I think we have strayed so far from that. That there's, it's the, one of the arguments I get in when I tell mutuals, like, if you left, nobody would shed a tear. They get all upset, like, oh, well, we're owned by the policyholder. And I'm like, they don't know that. That's ridiculous. They don't know that policyholder has some kind of ownership over the insurance company. They don't care. And so it's funny, right? Because it's the truth. The policyholder does own that, but the insurance company doesn't treat them that way. And they don't think they have a stake in it. And maybe that's the bigger problem, right? Now, of course, I'm coming from a property angle instead of a liability one, but even in the casualty areas, like, who are we? Like, what's the foundational thing that we're trying to do here? And then what are all of the tools that are available? And, you know, my interview with Laura, I think, you know, she said, you know, an apology can go a long ways. Like, there are a lot of ways to mitigate the effects of like nuclear verdicts and stuff like that. There's a lot of things the insurance company can do to mitigate that. And a lot of times they do the wrong things because they're so focused on the bottom line element of it that they forget that there's a human being on the other side, and small nuanced things can go a long way. That's, we haven't even included technology in that, but you know, it does matter. Like, who's the attorney on the other side? What's their reputation? What's their record on all of that? Adding that predictive modeling, like, to make sound decisions with the human piece of it on, like, what is it that we're trying to do? And then feeding all of that feedback, positive and negative, back into the system so that it evolves. It gets smarter and smarter. To me, that's the general direction we as an industry need to go.
Okay, well, let's end it with this and then I'm gonna close. Nick, there's been billions of dollars pumped into this industry in the past year, literally directly into companies that barely have four walls put up, but have this Well, I think they want to make a lot of money too, but they want to, but they realize that they're going to have to do it completely differently than the incumbents. So will we get there soon?
Get where? Get to, they
get
make
to,
money?
Get to a, get to this advanced state where the technology is going to drive down costs for the policyholder, drive down litigation, and make this a, you know, bring this into, bring this industry into the 21st century across the board in every facet. I mean, are, if $2 billion or $5 billion, whatever it's been, if it just got dumped into here, do you think that that's going to, that that's going to be what it takes to take us to the next stage?
I don't know. If you put a gun to my head, current funding with the current cast of characters, I would say not this cast of characters.
Fascinating.
Probably the next wave. We have to learn from the mistakes this wave makes, but this wave will survive. A lot of them will survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I think it'll be the next wave that creates that foundation that gets to this utopia of insurance that I'm kind of discussing.
Well, you were right 5 years ago. You're probably going to be right now.
I'm wrong often.
Yeah. Well, we'll only talk about when you're right. So don't
Thank
worry
you.
About it on the litigation management podcast. Yes.
I wish my wife would follow suit.
Yeah. Right. All right. We'll have her on next. Well, I really appreciate the insights. Like I said, these are the types of things, you know, we're not trying to talk to the founding partner of a law firm that's 5 years from retirement, or a chief claims officer that's 5 years from retirement. They don't care where it's headed. But if you are in, you know, like this, in the insurance nerds types groups, or you're one of the type of people that are just starting your career in claims, litigation, or as an attorney, which you can't get away from insurance if you are, these are the things you have to know, because these things are happening and they will fundamentally change. I mean, they will fundamentally change the demand for a claims litigation or a legal professional. So your perspective on this stuff, super valuable. And hopefully it sends people down a path of going and following you and learning about all these things themselves, because it will be completely different. Whether it's 5 or 10 years, it will be completely different. And we all have plenty of years ahead of us, so we better figure it out quick.
Yep.
So that in the first, I'm going to call that a success, the first litigation management podcast. I want to thank you, Nick, for once again, you know, not just sharing your journey, but also bringing in all of the outside knowledge from these, all the pieces that surround litigation to this audience, which is going to be thousands of claims litigation professionals. So thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. And if anyone wants to find me, Twitter and LinkedIn are the best. Nick Lamparelli on LinkedIn. I think there are a couple of us. So I'm the uglier.
At Nick Lamps, right? At Nick Lamps, is that it?
And Twitter, it would be, is at @Nick_Lamparelli. I actually have two I have on there, but at @Nick_Lamparelli is where I've, that's where you'll get my diatribes.
And where can we follow your new podcast?
The podcast is the Yellow Book Road podcast, and shame on me for not remembering the name. I'm hosting it on Brian Falchuk's site, but you can find it. It's the Yellow Book Road podcast.
We'll
you can
it.
Find it on Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, yep, and YouTube. Just type in the Yellow Book Road podcast.
All right. Well, there you have it. Nick Lamparelli on the first episode of the Litigation Management Podcast. Thanks so much, Nick.
Thanks, Wes.